Welcome to Snap Talk. I'm Venetia Butler. In a world on autopilot, this podcast empowers you to embrace your agency. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Carol Lee, Breathwork and Life Guide. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Venetia. I'm absolutely fabulous and really excited to have been invited on my first ever podcast.
Great. I love firsts. I think they're awesome.
Yes.
So I think let's start by finding out a little bit about you. Who is Carol Lee? Tell us about you.
Carol Lee, yeah, that is a very interesting question. And like I was just saying to you earlier, I had to really sit and think about that. So I think I always like to say, you know, I'm a little glimmer, a little fragment of this greater cosmos. But, you know, in the work that I do working with the Enneagram, I kind of say that Carol Lee is the actress that plays all the roles in her life movie. Currently, that one of those roles is a midlife woman. I am a eldest of four children. I have a husband. I have two fabulous young adult children. And currently, who is Carol Lee? She's navigating this midlife crisis that many people call it. And I've come to realize it's not really as much of a crisis. It's just like you mentioned about the firsts. Mm. It's a lot of flippant firsts.
Yes, you know, sure.
When you all of a sudden realize, oh my gosh, okay, there's parents getting old. Oh, what is that all about? The stresses about that. Start worrying about your retirement. I now have adult kids that I worry about, you know, are they going to be financially stable, you know. And then, of course, you got your own body, as we've spoken a bit about, you know, the good old menopause that nobody even told me anything about. Carol Lee's also somebody that is really someone that needs her quiet space. I value solitude immensely. I am a lifelong learner. I adore learning. Carol Lee loves her solitude. Carol Lee is somebody that needs the solitude to come out into the world and to give of herself. I love a good Americano. I love exercise in terms of like rebounding and stretching and just breathing and connecting that breath with my movement. Mm. And over and above that, Carol Lee is really somebody that sees life through the lens of a type one Enneagram. So yeah, hello fellow perfectionists out there. That's me. I walk a close road with perfectionism as well as that nasty little inner critic. I call her Lucille.
Got her.
Oh, goodness.
There is this notion that breath and breathwork are the same thing. My question is, essentially, are they? And what is the difference if there is one?
That's a fabulous question. And I want to start off by saying, first of all, that breathwork is not breathing. Breathing is what you are automatically doing. So breathing is the normal autonomic function your body does in the background,
right,
to keep you alive. So that's the taking in of the oxygen, oxygen exchange, 100%. Breath work is exactly what it says, when you work with the breath. So you now take that autonomic function and you take control of it.
Okay.
So you do a variety of techniques. So that's where breath techniques come in.
Can I ask you why I would need to take control?
So you need to take control so that you can bring about transformation in your emotions, your physical body, your mental body, your spiritual body. So if you are anxious, for example, you want to now take control of your breath to slow your breathing down, because anxious breath is very fast, very shallow, very quick, and actually adds into the anxiety. So when you take control, you say, no, I don't want to do that breathing. I want to slow it down. I want to inhale one, and you can count in your head, inhale one, two, exhale two, three, four. So you are now working with your breath. You're not allowing your breath to just flow as it wants to. You've taken control. So breath work goes beyond the normal inhale and exhaling.
So it's a technique that I can learn,
mm-hmm,
that is based on the symptom being presented,
mm-hmm,
or the core or the solution I'm seeking.
Yes.
For what I'm experiencing.
100%.
So it's no longer me just being regulated by my breath, which keeps me alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's me taking control.
Yes.
And allowing my breath to work for me.
Exactly.
Got it.
So, and the other thing is how we work with that is, breath is automatic, it's going. So the first step is to become aware of your breath. So there's a practice called breath awareness. And once you are aware of your breath, we can then look at fixing whatever breath dysfunction there is. Maybe you're breathing very up in your chest. Maybe you're breathing reversely. And once we've fixed that, then we shift into working with the techniques for whatever is being presented.
Got you.
And then over and above that, another technique is you can use it for complete transformation. So there's a very specific technique for a transformational kind of breath experience.
So no matter the outcome, the starts awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is understanding the difference.
The difference, yes.
And using this to really allow ourselves the best advantage of the very thing that keeps us alive.
Yes, yes.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense to me. Mm. And thank you for qualifying the difference. I think it also contributes to the buzzwords that this is a nice to, or it's, you know, it's something you can do in your spare time if you're the stay-at-home mom. And, you know, from what I've heard you say, quite the opposite. This is for everybody who literally is in a space where they want to master the best outcome of their body and their functionalities, and whether that be emotional, physical, spiritual, or psychological, or physiological. Breath work is a guide that can help us.
100%. And that's why I say to people when they say, oh, it's just breathing, I say, simply breathing is not enough. What matters now is how you breathe.
Yeah.
How are you taking control with that breath to bring the changes you want to see in your body, your mind, your heart, your life?
So would it be fair to say that there could be different reasons that you would need to master your breath work, and there could be different needs for you to get this right?
You would use the breath work, I'll put it this way, the breath work and the technique and the way you work with it will be adapted to what you are wanting to use it for.
So why is it such a buzzword? Why is everybody speaking about this?
From my perspective, it's the way we're living. It's the way we're living. We have been so busy looking outside of ourselves for ways to heal physically, mentally, emotionally. And the world and the human is in crisis. The amount of mental illness and mental health concerns we're having now, it's just escalating throughout the world. And our nervous systems are in a constant state of this fight, flight, or freeze, which means that we are living our lives constantly either wanting to fight, run away, or just freeze. So we're not actually interacting, immersing ourselves in living our lives. That's why I say, you know, I'm a breathwork and life guide. So with my breathwork, I'm wanting to guide you into how to live your life. So if you had a health concern like asthma, you would use breath techniques in a completely different way, and you would use certain breath techniques. You wouldn't use all of them. If you are wanting to breathe for anxiety, you would use different techniques. So that's what I mean. They will be applied to what you need.
So people today, I mean, you said it, they're feeling exhausted, they're disconnected, they're constantly on. How can breath work and voice work help us reclaim a sense of rest, patience, and real connection with ourselves?
A beautiful, beautiful question. Because this is what people also don't want to understand about breath. And I'm going to go back to the previous question that you asked me about breath work to also add in there. To work with your breath, you need a relationship. And that's where my working with breath and as a breath work practitioner is very, very different. I'm not there to just teach you the techniques. You can go and do that, to go and find them on Google. They're all there.
I just want to pause there for a second for clarity. When you say breath work, you need a relationship. Can you define that in terms of relationship with yourself, others, your coach, your guide?
Good question. A relationship with your breath.
Right.
So when you build a relationship with your breath, you become aware of it. So when we go back to that definition of breath work, it is using your breath work intentionally, taking control of it and using your breath in a very intentional manner. Before you can do that, for me, if you're working with me as a breath work coach, I'm going to guide you into connecting with your breath through breath awareness, stopping and actually feeling the breath in your body, listening to your breath, Because from there, you can build that relationship of being able to listen and hear your breath. Figure out, what is my baseline? Where am I here? What do I need? And for me, it's then you ask breath. You say, beautiful breath, beautiful life force that I've been gifted. May I work with you now in this way? I want to do that box breath. Not, I'm going to do box breath. Let me just do box breath. That is very hard, very invasive, and very prescriptive and goal-orientated. But I want to soften. I want to teach my clients to soften into that relationship, the sacredness of that breath, and then say, oh, please, let's work together. I want to try this technique. That's the relationship that I'm talking about.
So first, it's the in, right?
It's the
me
in.
Restoring my relationship with breath.
Yes, yes.
And you know, it's interesting to me because I think we spoke about this buzzword, but how many people are truly aware of the power of that relationship and how much it can totally transform always feeling tired, fatigue, feeling the stress. You spoke about fight, flight, the cortisol high, the adrenal fatigue that we are experiencing. Would you say that those are such contributing factors to this being so hyped right now and such a topic of conversation?
So definitely that. So the big thing here is that there's huge science backing the breath. So that's the main, one of the main reasons why it's become so prominent now, because the science is being brought back. A lot of people see breathwork as very mystical and magical. Definitely that is there. But the science is literally what is helping you with your nervous system, where when you breathe, you can slow down your breath rate, which means you can slow down your heart rate. You can change the message that the vagus nerve is sending up to the brain. Through breath work, very specific techniques, you can actually lower your cortisol levels if it is dosed in a certain way.
So what you're saying is there's intentionality and there is a deliberate, practical, interpersonal guide that you provide that allows you to connect. Rather than just the theory around what this would do for you, it is about that practical, demonstrative skill that you need to acquire to be more intentional.
Yes. So when we go back to that question you asked me about the exhaustion, and then I jumped to that relationship, because it is when you stop to connect with that breath through, for example, just a sigh, just a beautiful inhale, sighing it out, that gives your body a chance. Your body has huge memory for rest and relaxation. That's been sucked out of it. We have been taught, conditioned, socialized into believing that rest is for the weak. It's just not something, and particularly for women, heaven forbid, you know, once you have your kids, you don't dare rest in case somebody judges you for being a useless mother. Yes. Because you dare take a moment to rest. So when we stop to breathe, you create that little moment where the body recognizes, oh, there's rest. It's like a sigh. And in that sigh, you then have the relaxation. And when that relaxation happens, there's a brief moment of safety that's triggered, the memory of safety. And it is only when we have safety that we can go into that stillness and hear ourselves, our true selves.
What's interesting to me is I think there are almost two routes you can walk here. You can walk the route of damage and then I need versus I learn to prevent the damage. You know, the all the things we spoke about. When you were saying that, I literally felt as relaxed as the description. And I was like, oh, that feels so good. You know, I call that honoring the pause. I don't believe we honor the pause. I think that we work for the applause rather than understanding that if we don't honor the pause, we might be version two, the person who gets to the point where they're so exhausted and tired that they almost don't have breath.
I love what you're saying there, that honoring the pause. And in honoring that pause, I think it's also we come to that point where rest is not a luxury.
No.
It's actually a life skill we've got to teach ourselves. Mm. And we can only, for me, only teach ourselves that with a connection to breath.
Ah, preach, sister. I always say that, you know, rest, the most successful, certainly the most consistently successful people in the world prioritize rest as strategically as the other factors in their life.
Yes. So 100%.
You know, we spoke about the fact that this is something that really does speak to these causes that we find with people. What inspired you to connect voice, breath, and authenticity in the way that you teach it today?
I think that goes back to what I said earlier, but I only put the connection together, it was this year. So I work for my own spiritual, something that Carol Lee is very much into personal growth and really seeing why I'm here on this planet. In contemplating that the one day, I was like, what is this? My voice is my breath. Oh my goodness. It was like, I was like, when you breathe, that exhale, so that exhale of the air is what I'm giving. So when you speak, you inhale. Before you speak, you actually inhale. And then as you speak, you're speaking on the exhale. And I realized, like, if my breath is so shallow and fast, first of all, I can't speak in a long, sustained way. I'm going to sound like this choppy, nervous, breathy person. And then I was thinking that the reason my breath will be short and choppy and shallow is because I'm not sitting and connecting with my breath, taking time to work with it, to help it get smoother and deeper and wider. And then if I sit with my breath, I'm actually sitting with me. I'm starting the relationship with me. I'm starting to hear me. So that was the connection that I came to for myself.
Speak to me about this, you know, this, there is this feeling, perhaps it's a perception out there, that this type of conversation we're having, this style of managing stress, who falls into this category? And is it new age? Is it a concept that's come because it's popular? Speak to me about the controversial attachment that we tend to have with something of this nature versus who this works for and who benefits from this type of thing. You did start by saying a few things early on. Who benefits?
So anybody and everybody benefits from breathwork. Any age. Breathwork is one of the most safest medicines on the planet.
When you say medicine, how are we healing? Yes.
So I think people are so looking for quick fixes. So they want to take the pill. And I want to just make it very clear that I have family members, very close family members, that do struggle and walk a journey with anxiety, and they are on medication. Okay, so I'm not saying don't take medication. What I am saying is it's become so easy to just go and get the medication, or medical practitioners to just say, here is the medication for the symptom.
Right. We're not addressing that cure.
Yes. So healing is not an end result. In the medical, and again, I'm not a doctor. I'm talking from my personal experience. When going to a medical practitioner, it's to look at the symptom. What can I give you to take away the symptom? But the symptom is there for a very real reason. The symptom is your body actually speaking to you. And if you aren't going in to see what is causing the deep, 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 deep root of what is causing that symptom. And that is why I do coaching with a breath work, because there's something more than that. So if you start addressing what is underlying the symptom, that's when the healing starts.
What sort of symptoms are you finding?
I'm talking about just the symptom of anxiety. Let's just talk about anxiety. The symptoms around anxiety, the racing heart, the sweating, all those kind of things. So we look at anxiety. I go to the doctor. I get medication to stop the anxiety. But that anxiety is trying to tell me something. It's trying to tell me that where I'm going in potentially is a very dangerous situation. I'm not feeling safe in that situation.
Sure.
And we have to go underneath into the murky, shadowy areas and start exploring what is there. What is that anxiety actually? Is it an anxiety that wants me to get the energy to move out of my system quickly? Because then we use a very specific breath technique for that. Or is it an anxiety that actually I just need to go curl in a little ball and hide. And then we have different breath techniques for that. Now, when you look at those two anxieties, why are they representing in that way? What has led to that? So me, for example, I'm a type 1 on the Enneagram. So what drives me is really being good. I fear bad. So my anxiety will be exacerbated if I'm going to potentially make a mistake, not be perceived as being perfect, and making some kind of stuff up. I will start getting anxious. My heart rate will start increasing. My breath rate will start increasing. My mouth will get dry. But now I need to go back. Where did that come from? That came from a little girl. That message I received about the mistakes. So popping an anxiety tablet is not going to change
the cause.
The cause.
Or the underlying symptom that wants attention.
Yeah. So now for me, I can now go, wow, when that anxiety comes, that's my little inner girl, my little Carolee, that is so terrified of making a mistake again. And as the adult, I can say, listen, your little one, we're going to breathe now. We're going to breathe. We're going to calm this nervous system down, and we're going to allow that mistake, because breath teaches us when you inhale, you exhale. And then there's another inhale. There's another chance.
So when I think about that, I think about, you know, anxiety being such a big topic and so many people who need this. But as you were saying this, I was thinking about people that I know in my life and in the capacity of in whatever capacity they're in. And I think to myself, to your point, this is from little to a very, very busy business person, lady, male, female, to somebody who might be in retirement and fear that that next phase in their life could be very different or present very differently. It really is literally to your point. If you are breathing, then you are somebody who should be aware of how to utilize your breath.
I think if I want to say why we all need the breathing, I think it is because every single person there is shell-shocked, shattered by life. Life is a roller coaster. Life is not going to stop happening. So I'm a very firm believer, going back to who Carolee is, ordinary life teaches us everything.
Sure.
But ordinary life can be hell of a hard. And the breathing is to create that safety. You creating the safety for yourself.
And how?
That's what you're doing. Who gives you that breath? When you, and you exhale, and you're here in the world.
Yeah, that's sign of life.
Yes.
First sign of life.
Yes. That's what is so, so profound. And I think that is what scares people.
Well, it is interesting because I think so many of us, it's like much of the science we're exploring now. You know, it's what we don't talk about. And yet, you know, you look at it and you go, that's so obvious. How did we miss sign one? How did we miss like virtually the first measurement we have of life? And you almost think, really? But I think sometimes the obvious is perhaps too obvious until we turn back to the benefits, the symptoms and the great cures.
Yeah. And that's why I say simply breathing is not enough in this world anymore. We've all been simply breathing. And the way we've lived has repatterned how we breathe. So there's a lot of dysfunctional breathing. So when I work with people, I bring in the science. I do make sure that their breathing is optimal.
I like that because I think there are people who have an opinion that this is, you know, a nice to, but
no,
not necessarily a, you know what I mean? It's not necessarily something I might need right now. And it's about separating that for people from a clarity perspective. You know, on that note, how can understanding our breath help us express ourselves more clearly and confidently in everyday life? We've now been given this gift. How can it help us express ourselves more confidently and clearly?
When we express ourselves, I feel your breath needs to be your first word.
Okay.
So it gives you that pause and it stops the reactivity. So one of the big words I learned through all my teachings was this word responsibility. And somebody once said to me, it's about being response-able.
Yes.
Able to respond. So we... Again, we go into the world and we want to fight all the time. We want to make sure we seen, we heard, but we're doing it in such an aggressive way all the time that it just absolutely obliterates us. So when we have that relationship with our breath, we can, when we take that first breath before we speak, we can check in with where is my baseline? What is going on here? Is there anxiety present here? Am I ready to fight? Am I ready to flee? Am I ready to freeze? And then I can choose how I'm going to move, how I'm going to speak. Already, when you can take that breath before you speak, you can ground yourself, you can settle yourself. Your breath rate will automatically, just in that one breath, drop a notch. And when you speak, that because you're relaxed, your shoulders drop, your neck will be more open. When you speak, you'll have that grounded voice. Instead of speaking in that squeaky voice, because when you speak like this to people, yeah, they don't want to hear. It's like sharp angles. But if you can say to somebody that's really made you angry, first of all, you're going to stop, look them in the eye, take a breath. Chances are they're going to react first and you'll just keep breathing. But when you've taken that first breath, you can say, this is the way I see it.
I've always seen that as emotional regulation. But I think the connection for me is a little bit deeper than just emotionally regulating. Mm. I think it is almost pairing with breath to say, let's partner. Mm. In the sense that that is my exclamation back to you. And I'm slowing down this whole narrative of I must always respond, you know, and to your point, in the most fast and fury and, you know, a counteractive way, rather than to go, let me honor this in its purest form, because that to me ties so beautifully with emotional regulation and your ability. You spoke about this heard and seen. What I love about what you've just said is to be heard and seen has to start with us. Has to start with us being so purposed about how we are best positioned to be heard and seen.
100%.
And how we're best positioned to present that to other people because we've mastered it to ourselves. That takes practice, I'm pretty sure.
100%. And when you say that being best positioned, that best position is presence. And that presence is in the body.
Love that, because I also always say to people, learn to be present. But to your point, what you're saying is it has to start within the body. We have to learn. So let's go worst case scenario. For the want of a better word, type A personality is exhausted. Type A personality is facing those words, the burnout, the fatigue. They've come to see you. And for that matter, the impact has now been felt by their children, and we are seeing this presented in them as well. What sort of course do you put them on? How long, what journey is this? How do we start any remedial factors here? What would you recommend?
Look, the first thing I always do is we just have a session where we just talk, because it is really just to be heard. Because at that point, like I always say to them, you know, burnout is the gift your body's given you at this moment to come to a full stop. So the first thing I do is just try and reframe that burnout to see that it, to get them to have a new perspective that it's really, it's a powerful, powerful place to be. You're not broken. You don't have to be fixed, but there's a new way for you to choose to be in this world. You're not going to stop being A type. I don't expect you now to be, oh, I'm so chill, you know, I'm just going to choose another type of personality. No, but let's just stop for the moment and let's just have a look at what's going on. And then I generally try to work with a 4 to a 6 session course with something like burnout. And then the very next thing I do is just start them gently with breath awareness. We don't go into now, let's just see, let's get your carbon dioxide tolerance levels up and blah, 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 and let's check how you're breathing incorrectly. It's just to start that relationship of connecting with their breath and just being aware. And we do feedback around that and a few journal prompts that they can think about, because it's so new and so, so scary. And when they come, they want to be fixed. So that's the biggest thing. This is not about fixing. It's a new journey you're going on.
I like that. And I like the fact that you keep referring to choice, how you choose to show up, how you choose to present yourself in the world. Again, it reminds me of that book, The Body Keeps the Score. And, you know, burnout is your sign and it's a gift to you. Mm. What you do with it will define it. And you did again say it's choice, right? Mm. How you choose to present yourself in the world doesn't mean you're broken.
Mm-mm.
It means you have a different choice that you can make.
Mm.
And you don't have to stay in this space of hurting or stuck or without tools.
I think the other thing I also, for me, is very big, and I always try and bring that in. I try to get people to understand that they're not alone in this world. Their burnout partly is because of the world in which we are living. Because when they come with a burnout or the exhaustion or whatever, it's always like they've done something wrong. And I did a workshop the other day on exhaustion, and we were just chatting, and I said to them, you know, exhaustion is collective. The world is exhausted. The earth is exhausted. The humans around you are exhausted. So we pick up that exhausted energy from other people as well. So our energy is being shared, and we need to learn, for example, with exhaustion to kind of protect our energy. But the same with burnout. You know, when you go into a workplace and your CEO is a stressed out, possibly narcissistic, goodness knows whatever, we're talking, you spoke worst case scenario, we'll go worst case scenario here. Pressure, pressure, pressure. That oozes, that stress, that cortisol actually oozes out of his skin, his or her skin.
Palatable.
Yes, it is palatable. You, of course, are going to pick up on that. So that is also why breathwork is so important in something like burnout, where how do you protect yourself going forward? You're here to heal, to fix, to reframe, to reshift, so that when you go back in, you've got a better idea of how to look after yourself.
Do you find that becomes a conscious awareness for others, that people sort of look and go, there is something different here? You know, especially to the point that there are so many alumni in the Sleep When I'm Dead Club, in the Badge of Honor Exhausted. You know, I don't know about you, but I find that the dominant conversation I have with people when I ask how they are is around two key factors: burnt out, tired, exhausted, fatigued. And it's almost become symbols of self-worth to people, and it's almost how people identify their worth rather than, you know, the courage to say, actually, I'm really good intentionally, and I've chosen a path where I present myself, or the best version of me is one where my breath is my voice, I use it well, and I've learned how to. So
100%.
Right, so Carol Lee, you know, primarily your key working identity was that of deputy headmaster. I think you had a career span of over
30 years.
Over 30 years, lifetime.
Lifetime.
My mother was a teacher. I certainly think if ever there was some advocacy, it was for more respect for the hard work that teachers do. Tell me, I'm interested, what transitioned you from Carol Lee in that primary role to your interest in breathwork? How did you find it?
I found it through I was doing yoga at a studio, and they had a pop-up store, and there was a book by Dr. Ela Munger, The Strategies for Burnout. And I read that book, and I was like blown away. I mean, it spoke so deeply to every single thing I was experiencing. And I then immediately booked a session with Dr. Ela Munger. And then lo and behold, COVID came. And she suggested we do something online, and I was, no, nothing online, thank you. I'll wait until I can see you in person, because I wanted this in-person stuff from her. And I then went onto the Breathwork Africa website, and there was this foundation course on breathwork. I mean, I had no idea about breathing up until that point. And I did the foundation course, and it blew my mind. It absolutely blew my mind. And I think the biggest thing that blew my mind was that, like, breath is the gift of life, and that the word breath is in every single religion. It was just such a unifier. I was like, what? And when I finished that course, that was kind of like, the breath called me. It sounds really woo-woo, but the breath called me, and I was like, I am going to do that advanced practitioner training. When I was doing the foundation course, In school, as I was the deputy working a lot, I was the head of student affairs, which meant I dealt with the mad, glad, happy, sad parents, kids, and teachers. And I then tried to start putting the breathwork in place. So I would go to class. I was doing life orientation then and say to the kids, we are going to do a few minutes of breathing every lesson. And I got to the point where they would actually remind me, you know, ma'am, we haven't done the breathing. And I was such a rush. I mean, a top, go, go, go. You know, there's so little time that I would sometimes like, oh, no, I've got work to do. Okay, no, no, no. Yes, I did say, okay, let's just breathe. And you know, at the end of the day, my grade 12s, their breath rates would be anything between 18 and 25. And for your body to be fairly relaxed, your autonomic nervous system, your breath rate should be between 8 and 14.
Right.
And that just, I was like, what is going on here? And then I started using it for kids that were coming to me. You know, sometimes a child would come to me and they're angry with their mother for something. And then I would say, well, it doesn't help that you scream and shout. Let's do this technique to release some of the anger. Or, you know, I had a boy in matric that just came to my office. They brought him to my office and he was so stressed. He was shaking like tremendously. And I eventually got him to just lie down on the floor. And he just lay there on the floor. And I just played music and I just said, just breathe, just breathe. I didn't want to do any technique. And he just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. He'd had an argument with his mother. He was coming to write a matric exam. And he was incapable of writing the matric exam. And then my whole view of life and students and how we can help them change. And I just wanted to shove breath in everywhere. But unfortunately, because there's a belief, you know, a lot of beliefs around breath work being very not part of religion and, I don't know, woo-woo and all kinds of weird things, it was kind of frowned upon.
And is it true? Is this perception true?
No, 100% not. 100% not.
I mean, I'm 100%. Sitting here as a mother of a child in matric thinking, you know, if I could gift her with breath regulation, and if I could gift her with an ability to deal with this.
Exactly.
I struggle with the controversy.
Look, let me just make it very clear. When we work with cool kids, you work with a science of breath. It's pure science-based.
Techniques,
yes. It's pure science breath regulation when you are in the school place.
How do we advocate for this to get into our schools?
I think it needs to be the parents or the teachers, you know, because it's got to be something coming from the top down. You can't. If I go into schools, I say to the principals or the teachers, you cannot bring breathwork in and say to the kids, oh, here, you're stressed and anxious. We've got something else for you. You, as a school, need to be a breath-informed school. Yes. You need to be incorporating the breathwork in the lessons, in an assembly, in your staff meetings. It needs to be a culture in the school. And that's the problem. A lot of schools, I mean, that's the thing. They call me in and they say, oh, don't you want to quickly do a 20-minute thing on breath work? And I'm like, what do you want me to do in 20 minutes? That's like talking at people.
Not sort of teaching
Yes.
them.
You know, when you're going into schools, you want to give the kids an opportunity to actually share what they are experiencing because they need to be heard. They need to know they're not going crazy. Yes, what you're experiencing is excessive stress, excessive anxiety, excessive overwhelm. But let's look at how we can unpack that and not just have it as a label.
So I'm of the opinion if we equip the children who are going to become our adults, then we are giving them a very valuable tool. Let's transition to the workplace where we are finding these conditions almost dominating how people are showing up in their roles, whether that be a leadership position, whether that be, you know, running a team, running a, as an entrepreneur, a corporate, somebody who's in a new role. How powerful would it be in that sort of workplace?
Excessively powerful. Oh my goodness. Because in the workplace, it's very often like you just become this machine. It brings the humanity and the community back into the workplace because the reality is our work flows over into our social lives, into our spiritual lives. It's all interconnected nowadays. It's not compartmentalized like it used to be years ago. You know, you had your work friends and your church friends. It's very much merged. So when you bring breathwork into a workplace, you are saying, I am allowing the whole human here. And you are then acknowledging that that mother that has just dropped her little baby that was screaming with a temperature of 36, she's afraid, but she's had to come to work because her boss said, you will come to work. There's no such thing as just being late for this. Whereas hopefully with this, there's that sense of humanity. Listen here. Don't you just want to come in and half an hour later, we've got this. You just be with your little one and then come in. So when we do breath work in the workplace, automatically you are learning to regulate. And then besides the community that's formed there, you are again giving your employee a skill that they can take home. Because very often that employee, that teacher goes home. And who gets the worst of her?
Yeah.
The family.
Sure.
So if we can, like you say, with the school kids, empower them because they're going to be different, differently functioning humans one day.
Correct.
Thanks to this gift. If we can empower our employers, we can bring change in the actual homes. So that's like a social responsibility of the workplace.
And a full circle, organically. And a
full organic circle, 100%.
How adaptive is South Africa right now? How adaptive are we to this? Or do you still sense there's quite a lot of resistance? Question one. And two, is it because we don't know what we don't know? Mm. Or because we're clinging to wellness in its old context of, you know, let's have a nice wellness day and no criticism on those with good intention. But I mean, have we evolved?
I think we're starting to. I think it's very, very slow. And that's, for example, if you're going into a corporate space, the whole wellness day, it needs to stop because just doing something on that day is not sustainable. So when you're bringing something like breathwork in on a wellness day, you're empowering someone with a technique and you're saying, take that technique and practice it. Then you layer it in with every morning, we're going to have a quick little breath session together before we do our team meeting. Let's just sit and do two physiological sighs. You're shifting the energy. You're kind of going, oh, okay, we're here. We're allowed. So it is changing, but a lot of things need to change along with it. For example, the wellness day. It's not just an add-on.
Nice two.
Yeah, there's too many nice twos. And breathwork should not be like a perk.
I'm thinking about sales teams. I'm thinking about sales meetings. Yes. I've had the ability to witness, and I'm thinking if they walk out breathing, it will be a miracle because what's dominating is an adrenal high, for that matter, a fear. And I'm just sitting thinking, I don't know of anybody who could not benefit.
100%.
From, to your point, the techniques, the tools, but these are not going to happen in the absence of it becoming a lifestyle and a culture.
Yes.
And to your point, a culture is not wellness day. Culture is the way we do things, and we should be living this because that husband, that wife, that partner, that friend, that person, they go home and they become an extension of the day that they had. And I don't believe that home should get the rest of us. Perhaps we owe ourselves the best of us if we taught this technique.
I want to pop in with what you said there, the fear. I think that is the, it's the acknowledgement that as humans, we all experience fear and how very real that fear is, because the body, our body is primed. It's a very ancient system we've got in us to keep us alive. Today, that child going to school that hasn't done his maths homework, that's writing their final exam, there's absolute fear. That the fear is so real in the body that I'm going to die. That salesman that's not meeting the targets, that is fear of not surviving. The boy asking the girl on the date, that is fear of being rejected, standing on the stage.
Imposter syndrome.
Yes, so much of what we are doing every single day, right down to our thoughts, triggers the fear. And if we don't start allowing that and acknowledging that, that these things that we just think are supposed to be normal are actually really driving the fear factor up, driving our survival up. And ultimately, if our autonomic nervous system stays in a state of fight, flight, or freeze, the body will disintegrate mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And that is why breathwork is so needed in this world now. That is what I mean when I say the human is disintegrating. And we've got to fix, no, not the word fix, heal little bit by little bit from inside outwards.
That's exactly what I was actually going to ask. In the sense that you're saying you were there to support the students, what were you noticing the needs were?
Well, the need was a space to be real, to actually say, this is horrible, I'm scared, I'm angry, I'm angry at my parents, I'm angry at life, I'm angry at school, I don't know what to do, I feel trapped, to the point where a lot of the kids, you know, were skirting along the edges of suicide, you know, suicide ideation, and then dealing closely with kids that had actually attempted a suicide, and then now you're back in your life when you thought the master plan was to kill yourself, and the families, the ramifications of that for the families, and then of course also students that had actually managed to complete a suicide. It just leaves huge ripples. As one parent said to me, it's life before the suicide and life after. It's never ever the same.
And what was this due to?
It's pressure. It's pressure from all sides.
And age categories, yeah?
I was in high school.
Okay.
So it was mainly grade 8 to grade 12.
Johannesburg,
yes. And, you know, the thing is, this is also happening already in the primary school. In primary schools, the problem is that there's nearly a belief that students can't be anxious when they're in the primary school. And the reality is those kids do, because they're so busy finding who they are and, you know, parents have huge expectations, and the amount of work and the way students need to study is very different from what I had to do and, you know, the students that I was teaching. So just a lot of pressure to actually perform and to get the matric result. And because once you've got the matric result, then it's like you've arrived and you've now been successful. And not enough space for that messiness of just being a teenager, the exploration. Having space, I'm just going to say this, space to breathe, because it's just one thing after the other.
Mm.
Constantly going.
So, I mean, there's certainly a passion for that. I mean, it's very clear and evident in how you speak, and the cause is so needed in serving these children and helping them. To go back before we end with this, do you have any testimonials of people where one of the case scenarios we've presented, whichever one it is you possibly can think about, can you talk us through a typical testimonial of somebody who was in a really tough situation and has undergone some guidance around this, and what sort of symptoms and differences did you see?
I must be honest, a lot of the testimonials are women coming to me that are just so angry.
We are tired.
Yes.
And angry.
Yes. And it was a mom. She had kids in the high school, and she literally said to me, I feel like a tiger caged, and I'm walking up and down and up and down, and I'm just waiting to attack someone. I just want to attack. That is all I want to do.
Sure.
And we then literally started with relaxation, breath connected to movement, because she was so taut. Her body was so tense, it was crazy. Something like a simple cat-cow. There was no movement, no flexibility in her body. And her voice was also very tight and screechy, and she was just crying all the time as well. She could barely speak without crying. So we literally had to go back and repattern her breath, a lot of just getting her to breathe diaphragmatically, because it's like her diaphragm was completely stuck. It couldn't even move. So when your diaphragm is stuck as well, you need to know that your diaphragm is like your emotional muscle as well. Your emotions get stuck there if they're not moving through. So if a diaphragm's not moving, those emotions are just building and building and building. And it just pours into this vicious anger that you just want to fight and attack the entire world. So we had to really look at how does she start giving to herself without feeling guilty. But the breathing, the big thing was the diaphragmatic breath, and to just get her to actually be able to sit still and breathe with awareness. And then a few techniques to just release, you know, like warrior breath to release the anger when she's feeling in those moments. Because when you're so angry, it's all good and well, you're screaming and ranting and venting, but it's still inside you. Yeah. So with the warrior breath, you're breathing in and you're releasing that energy out of your body so that it doesn't get stuck and cause the migraines, the body tension. She was drinking coffee like you cannot believe. Vitamin B tablets, all of that wasn't working for her anymore. No sleep.
And where is she now?
Now she is in a better space, and she's actually moved into a career, something that she's chosen for herself, setting her children free without trying to control them all the time, actually just connecting with me every now and then. I think she connects with me to remind herself to breathe, you know, and I just keep checking in with her as well, you know, just to say, hey there, because it is, it's a whole new neural pathway, way of being that you've got to develop. It's not just a quick fix. That was literally like an 8-month journey.
Sure. And I think that's another thing you just mentioned is I think we don't, the quick fix is not the long term. Mm-hmm. We do need to we have to recreate that neural pathway. And we know that scientifically that is not overnight. It does take time.
Yeah.
Carolee, I'm very, very excited to tell everybody that you are going to be at our Women's Day event on the 1st of August. Carolee will be presenting a breath masterclass. Very excited about that. Share with us, what can they expect to experience in the breath masterclass? And can I come as I am, or would I have to have done some homework so that I don't present as per the symptoms that we've just discussed?
No. Come as you are. Just have an open heart and be curious.
Okay.
Yeah, there's absolutely no, you don't need anything. You just need yourself and your breath. So there we are.
What tools will you be unpacking for us?
So what we're going to do is, because we're looking at the voice, and the voice is so linked to everything going on in your throat, because your larynx and the voice box is there. So we will be looking at how important it is if you're wanting to use your voice clearly, to use breath to relax the body. So we're going to be talking about how powerful it is to just connect your breath to movement, to relax.
Great.
So that's one of the big things we're going to do. And then just really connecting to the breath, doing gentle breath awareness, and then maybe a technique, definitely a technique or two. And just to talk them through how you work with your breath.
Right.
Yeah. And just, I think, just to ground. It's just going to be like a big sigh, a lovely sigh.
I almost feel like replacing this masterclass title with pause. Pause, pause, pause.
Yes, we are going to pause, 100%, yes.
So if someone is listening today and they take just one conscious breath after this conversation, what would you hope they feel or remember in that moment?
I would say, like, when you take that, because you've taken control. When you've taken that moment to take a breath and you exhale it, you've taken control. It's a micro moment of control that you've taken. And over and above that, I would hope that everybody goes, oh my gosh, that is my breath. I was gifted that. And that is the evidence that I am meant to be on this earth at this time, and my presence is important.
Power. Certainly very powerful there. Thank you. Carolee, so excited to speak to you today. Thank you for making me pause. I find myself a lot of times during your conversation becoming conscious myself of just my breath and how it's such a deliberate choice, to your point, and how we present ourselves to the world. I'm excited to be attending that masterclass. If you could sum up what breathwork did for your life in one sentence, what would you say?
breath work brought me home to myself and made me love myself and realize I'm lovable and worthy.
Power. You know, what I love about that is we all want to come home. Last question. Where can we find you?
I am on Instagram. It's right. carollee.alberts. I think it's carol_lee.alberts. I've got a website, www.beonpurpose. I'm on LinkedIn as well, also just Carollee. And the reason it's Carollee and not fancy words, because it's me. It's my gift I'm sharing with the world. So the breath is so much part of me. So it's just go and Google my name.
Just to qualify, www.beonpurpose.co.za. Great.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you for your time today.
It's an absolute pleasure. I actually loved being here. And I'm also really, really so excited about this, because I think so many women, it's time for us, you know, just to realize we need to take up our space.
Yes.
We've been so... And that's also something that I learned with breath, actually, was the other thing, is that there's this masculine feminine. And as women, we've stepped into the masculine role, our masculine side, just driving, performing, playing all these roles. But the world needs the softness. And I'm not talking soft and running around in a pink dress, that kind of. I'm talking soft by being in touch with you, knowing what you need. Mm. Our voices. It's our wisdom as women. And I think more importantly, even for me, in this menopausal journey, we think there's no purpose for us. But beautiful women out there, your purpose is to model the magnificent humanness to your young adult children. They need us as mentors and role models out there.
I appreciate your time today. Thank you for that.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome.